So that's why in the present you really have to say the pronoun.
So gentlemen, if it's okay with you, we'll do a little bit of chazara for 5 minutes or so. And the Gemara on Daf Chav Gimel Amud Beis presents a machlokas or a new twist in the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, in which Rabbi Meir holds that the Baldin, we call him Shimon the defendant, can possibly aid him. And the Chacham, of course, reject that. And the Gemara suggests that perhaps, according to Rabbi Meir, the case is where the Edom are testifying on the Mishpacha. That's called Pgam Mishpacha, Arer Mishpacha. The Rabbanan say, no, at the end of the day, if indeed we accept their Edus and these witnesses belong to that Mishpacha that has Pgam in it, then they are ipso facto disqualified as witnesses, and therefore Shimon, in so far as he's disqualifying the witnesses, is an Ogeh B'Edus. And we started with two definitions of Ogeh B'Edus, the psul of Ogeh B'Edus, and perhaps those two definitions could shed a light on the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim. One definition is that of the Shach. The Shach holds that a Ogeh B'Edus is Choshed L'Shaker, we suspect him of lying. And then we have the Levush, who has more of what we call a technical psul. We called it yesterday a psul aguf of Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo, a person, if he testifies on his own behalf in a case, then he's related to himself, and therefore his testimony is unaccepted. The Arzarua had a possible suggestion that in a case where a person for a long period of time, he has a long record of calling someone a gazlan, and then years go by and all of a sudden that same person that he has accused as a gazlan for centuries all of a sudden shows up in a court to testify against him himself, and now he says, wait a minute, this guy's a gazlan. And the Arzarua has a sad, he's not definite about it, that perhaps in such a case we would waive the psul of Ogeh B'Edus, we would accept the defendant in his accusation of the aid as being a gazla, because he's not choshed al sheker. We don't believe he's lying, because years and years he's been claiming this guy is a gazla. However, if we would go with the Levush's definition that Ogeh B'Edus is possible because he's testifying on his own behalf, then in this case we need his testimony to possibly aid them and to accuse them of gazlanim. And in that sense, he's testifying about himself.
See, I almost think in this case, the one he accuses, you might be wondering whether or not he's telling the truth, because this is his opportunity to get back at Shimon. He's going to testify against Shimon because of all the things he said about me in the past.
In the past, right. But that only strengthens that side of the Arzarua to say that maybe we should accept the testimony of Shimon. And Reuven and the aide in this case is I don't want to call him Reuven, because Reuven we're reserving that name for the Tovev, the one who's the plaintiff who's claiming that Shimon owes him money. But the claim of and the testimony of Shimon that this aide is a gazlan is not subject to what we call a chashash sheker, because he's been saying about this so and so that he's a no good gazlan for years and decades. However, if we would go with the Levush's definition of Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo, then at the end of the day, when Shimon is testifying against this witness that he is a gazlan, he is testifying about himself, because he's disqualifying the testimony of the so-called gazlan against him. And Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo, there's no way we can accept his testimony. So in a sense, we have the Levush on one side of the equation, and we have both the Shach and perhaps the Arzarua on the other side of the equation. When I say perhaps, again, as I said, the Arzarua doesn't come to any definite conclusion, but he's certainly pushing for the analysis of Ogeh B'Edus as a Chashash Sheker, and in a case where there's no Chashash Sheker, we can accept his testimony even though it's relevant to himself, and that's against the That's against the Levush's definition of Adam Karav Eitzel Atzmo. Now, add Rashi into the equation, and Rashi also would seem to support the Shach's approach that the psul of Nogeh B'Eidus is a Chashash Meshaker. And that's the Rashi here in Masechtas Sanhedrin on Daf Chav Gimel Amud Beis. Yesterday we didn't get a chance to see the Rashi inside, so sometimes Osios Machkimos. So if you're looking at Rashi approximately 12 lines down from the top of the page on Chav Gimel Amud Beis, Dibra Masel Nogeh B'Eidusahu, and he says, Hai Bal Din, this Shimon, the defendant, is an Ogeh B'Eidus Mishum Delo Lisad Ale Kaosi Lemifsale. Now, let's get this, the Rashi, in its context. Rashi is saying that his intention, in this case Shimon's intention, is not to come and possibly them. Rashi introduces what we called yesterday the element of shogeg, which means the lack of knowledge, the lack of awareness. Now, where is this Rashi coming from? Let's see if we can find it first in the Gemara, because I skipped that step. It should be here. Oh, Omar of Acha Bar Ika, Bray de Rav Ika. Do you have such a Gemara? It's about, I would say, 12 lines down from the top. And Rav Acha Bray de Rav Ika is trying to defend Rav Lozar. Rav Lozar had suggested that if this litigant, we'll call him Shimon, the defendant, comes together with another witness, then he would be believed because he has another witness to support his claim. So the Gemara asks Kol Kamine, how does it help if he has another witness? We need two witnesses, and he, the litigant himself, is one of those two witnesses. He's an Ogea B'Eidus. Let's just see. Nogeh B'Eidusahu. Right. So this Rashi emphasizes the fact that the reason, the motivation for this witness, again, this litigant who's wearing another hat as a witness, to testify against these Edim, is the fact that he knows that he's going to benefit from this, from his testimony. Because these Edom are testifying against him that he owes the money. So Rashi seems to be operating with the element of Chashash Meshaker, because, let's explain, if we would go with the definition of the Levush, that Adam Karav Eitzel Atzmo, what difference does it make whether he knows and he's aware of the fact that he is Nogeh B'Eidus? Even if he's not aware of that fact, at the end of the day, he still is Karav Eitzel Atzmo. And how can he testify in a case where he himself is on trial? It must be, therefore, if Rashi puts the emphasis on the Kavana, that he's Mechavein Le'eduso Machmas Negioso, which are four words that you'll see in the paragraph on Yud that starts with Vihine Rashi, four lines down. You see where he says, Mechavein Lohoid Machmas Negioso. That would only make sense if you hold like the Shach and the Psul of Nogeh B'Eidus is because of Chashash Sheker. And therefore Rashi adds the stipulation that he knows and he realizes that he has all to gain by virtue of this testimony. But if on the other hand we go with the approach of the Levush, that the definition of and the underlying reasoning for the Psul of Nogeh B'Eidus is because he's a Karav Eitzel Atzmo, then even if he's a shogeg, he's unintentional, he has no knowledge and no awareness of the fact that he's Nogeh B'Eidus, he still is a Nogeh B'Eidus, and he's possible because Adam Karav Eitzel Atzmo. The real problem with our sugya is now the Gemara in Ksubis. The Gemara in Ksubis is going to prove to us that there's something called a milsa davidi ligluye. What does that mean? Let's say I called it yesterday a state witness or an expert witness. Let's say the testimony is important, but it can be checked out. There are ways in which we can establish one way or the other whether the testimony is true. And we're going to prove from the Gemara Ksubis, based on Rashi, and this is a sugya on Daf Chav Beis in Ksubis, that in the case of Pagam Mishpacha, we could believe and accept the testimony of someone who benefits from that testimony because it's a milsa davidi ligluye. Because even in the absence of this testimony, we'll be able to clarify it. And a person would not, Rashi explains, a person would not want to lie knowing full well that we can catch him on his lie. And that gives us very strong impetus and proof that he's telling the truth. So let's just go over the case in the Gemara Ksubis. There are three Dayanim sitting together in a Bezdin, and all of a sudden, the rumor goes out that one of the three Dayanim is actually Pasul. Now, two Dayanim are about to sign a Shtar. They need the third signature. Now there's an Ara'ar, and there's some sort of suspicion that the third Dayan is Pasul. And now the question is whether the two Dayanim can testify on behalf of the third Dayan that he's kosher. And the Gemara says that if bottom line is they can, but it depends. In other words, if they've already signed the shtar, then ein me'idim olav, they cannot testify on the third Dayan. If, on the other hand, they haven't yet signed the shtar, they can testify on the third dial. Now, to establish with their knowledge and with their testimony that he's kosher, that he is valid and he can serve as the third dial. So, shlosha sheyosh v'lekayim es hashtar v'korol iral echad mihem. Is ad shelo chosmu me'idim olav chosmu v'chosim mishachosmu ein me'idim olav v'chosim. So Ara Demai, what was the suspicion about the third Dayan? Elam, the Gemara says ma'ara de'pagam mishpacha. If that be the case, that there's some rumor, there's some suspicion that this Dayan comes from a mishpacha that's not completely Jewish, so we're questioning his yuchsin, then we should believe the Dayanim, even if they signed on the shtar, because that's not negir b'edus. Why? Because gili milsa b'almahu. Rashi says that they would not lie about the status of the third Dayan, because that's something that we're going to be able to clarify. There's going to be an entire investigation to determine the nature of this mishpacha. And a person wouldn't lie in that case because he knows that he'll get caught on a lie. So it comes out that when you have what's called an arer mishpacha, there's a suspicion about a person and his personal status in yuchsin, it's called a milsa davidi ligluye, and any testimony that comes forward, even if somebody would be a nogabi edus, he would still be acceptable, and that's based on the fact that he's going to get caught in a lie. He's not lying. We know he's not lying. He would not, it wouldn't make any logical, rational sense for a person to perjure himself in a testimony in a court when he knows they'll catch him on the lie. That's silly. That's idiosyncratic. So therefore, in such a case of a milsa davidi ligluye where we know how to clarify this, a person is believed. And even though he's an ogevi edus, we don't think that he has a chashash sheker. Let's apply that rule to our sugya. The Gemara says that according to Chachamim of Rabbi Meir, when the litigant, we'll call him Shimon, the defendant, wants to testify against the Edom in a Pagam Mishpacha, then he's not believed because he is an Ogebi Edus. These are Edom who are testifying against him. If he testifies again about their Mishpacha, then willy-nilly he's testifying about these Edom and he's disqualifying them and they're testifying against him. We just finished saying that in the case of Arar Mashpacha, the Gemara says in Ksubis that there's no psul of no Gebi Edus because it's a Milsa Davidi Ligluya. Here too, we should apply the same yardstick, the same rules, and it's a Milsa Davidi Ligluya. And therefore, there's no psul of no Gebi Edus. Why did the Chachamim say we cannot accept his testimony about the Mashpacha of these Edim? When it's a milsa because of no Gabi Edus, when it's a milsa Davidi Gluya. So that's just a recap of what we did yesterday. I mean, it took me almost 15 minutes, but you know, it's complicated. We're up to the paragraph which we were not able to begin yesterday, Vehine Bitshuvas Arajba. So I just want to make sure everyone's on the same page here. It would be the bottom right on page Yud. The Rashba introduces another sugya about Nogeh B'Edus in Baba Basra in the third chapter. The Gemara there wants to know whether the seller could testify on the very sale on behalf of the lokeh, the buyer. In other words, let's say there's some issue as to the status of this karka, whether or not so-and-so, we'll call him Shimon, actually owns the karka and it's, you know, it's legally his or not. Can Reuven, who was the seller, testify about this karka? That this karka was indeed sold to Shimon. And the Gemara says in Masechet Bava Basra, the third parak, that this depends upon achrayus, which means the following. What is achrayus? Literally translated responsibility, but achrayus in this context means shibud. Shibud means a lien, L-I-E-N. Now, there are two types of sales. There's a sale of karka with achrayus, and there's a sale of karka without achrayus. And the difference is, let's say the seller has an outstanding debt. If an event that he cannot pay up that debt, the creditor, the Baal Tovea, can come to the lokeach, to the buyer, if the sale was be'achrayus, and can confiscate the karka, the real estate, from the hands of the buyer. Why? Because when the buyer bought the karka, he bought it with achrayus. He brought it with a shibud and a lien on it that says that if the seller, we'll call him Reuven, has any outstanding debts, those debts are collectible from this karka. And that's called mocher b'achrayus. Now, would the mocher be believed to say that he sold the karka to the lokeach, meaning Reuven to Shimon? Does anybody see why Reuven has vested interests over here? What does Reuven gain by establishing that this karka was his and he sold it to Shimon? He gains the following. If he has a creditor, if he has an outstanding loan, then now his loan will be paid up. Why? Because if he sold this piece of karka subsequent to the loan to so-and-so, then the malva, the one who lent him that money, in event that the mocher doesn't have the money to repay him, he now has recourse to confiscate the karka from Shimon the lokeh. Why? Because the sale was b'achrayus. Now, imagine, just to make the case even more dramatic, the money that Reuven, the seller, owes to his creditor, his malve, is money that he received from the malve, who's his uncle or his brother. Right? Who do you go to first when you need money? If you need a loan, again, depending upon family relations, right? If the family is put together, I don't know if that's the rov or the mir, but anyway, then he borrows money from one of his relatives. Now, if he borrows money from one of his relatives, then how much more so does he have vested interest and a benefit by making sure that the karka that he sold was with achrayus, and by testifying on this karka that was sold to so-and-so, his relative now, who lent him money, can now be repaid for that loan by confiscating the karka, because the karka was sold with achrayus, with a lien on it. So, eino meid olav. We cannot accept the mocher, who's also a lova, he borrowed money, his testimony on behalf of the lokeach, on behalf of Shimon. Why? Mipnei shemamida, this is at the end of the top line on the left column, mipnei shemamida bifnei balchov dekarov lemocher. Because he is now setting up this karka as collectible karka in lieu of the loan that he has not repaid to his own relative. But shalobach rayus, if on the other end the sale has no achrayus, which means it's no longer lien, it's not collectible, kosher lahoy, then adarav, if he, you know, who's going to testify in this mechira better than the mocher himself? He's testifying about himself that he sold his karka. Now, where's, so you might say, well, he has vested interest. No, he has no vested interest. Why? Because there was no achrayus in the sale, and there's no way that the mocher's balchov would come and collect this karka from the loker. All that is in the Gemara in the third chapter of Bava Basra. So the Rashba writes the following, that in the last case that we had of mocher shelo bachrayus, the reason why we can accept the testimony of the mocher is because, quote, he has no negias mamon. Let's underline those two words, negias mamon. In other words, in a case where a person is able to repay his loans, so that's a great thing. A person doesn't want to be a rasha and borrow money and not return the money, but that's not called an igias mama. Ela hana bi alma. That's a benefit, but says the Rashba, a benefit is not the same as an igias mama. What's the benefit that he gets? Why does he feel more comfortable and happy about it? Shelo yikare lo v'rasha v'lo yishan. The pasuk says, I think it's a pasuk in Mishlei, if I remember correctly, that a rush is a person who doesn't repay his loans. Avol hecha sheyesh lo negias mamon, af karov lanogea pasul. Which means the following: the real karov here, I'm sorry, the real nogea here is the malve, right? We call him the uncle, who lent money to his nephew, the mocher. He's the one who's nogea b'edus, meaning it's very important for him to establish that this field was sold with achrayus to so-and-so, we'll call him Shimon, so that now the uncle of Reuven, the seller, can now collect that karka in lieu of a loan that was defaulted. I mean, he didn't pay the loan back. And now we're saying the following, that Reuven, who wants to testify about this sale, although he's not himself an ogea, because he sold the karka by his own admission, but nevertheless, he is a karov of the nogea. He is the nephew of the nogea, right? Because the uncle is the one who desperately wants to get back his karka, to retrieve and collect and confiscate this karka in lieu of the money that he shelled out as a loan to his nephew. But now the nephew himself is Karov Lenogea. And the Rashba wants to expand the definition of Noge B'edus as a psul to include even someone who, although he's not the Nogea, but he's Karov to the Nogea. Ukeinze Kosova Nasivis B'shem Atumim. These are all the Gedolim on Choshim Mishpat, the classic giants. And they came to the same conclusion. So we'll double check these conclusions in just a minute. Let's just see where and how they came to the same conclusion. Then we'll compare the conclusions and summarize them. The Ramah wants to know the following. We have a Gizbar Tztaka. He is appointed and responsible to divvy out the community chest, the charity of the community. Now, the question is the following. who can testify about these funds, that they belong to the community chest, that they were dedicated as tzedakah? The Gizbar himself has what's called a Tovas Hanoah. What pleasure does he get by designating money for the community chest? He's in charge of divvying out that money. He gets a kick out of it. What does it mean he gets a kick? He has what's called a Tovas Hanoah. He gets a great deal of pleasure because the decision is in his hands to decide how to allocate these funds. So the more funds there are in the chest, the more rights he has and pleasurable rights to allocate these funds. The Ramah says that although the Gizbar would not be believed to testify in this money that it's staka, but the Krovei HaGizbar, his relatives, are believed to testify about this staka. Even though, let's call it the uncle again. So the uncle wants to testify that these funds belong to tztaka, and by doing so, the nephew will get this tremendous hanoah called Tovas Hanoah, the benefit of the fact that now he has extra funds which he can allocate l'misha yirtze, to whichever ani he chooses to do so. Says the Ramah, you know why the uncle could testify? After all, l'chora, he's a karov to the nogea, right? The gizbar himself is nogea because he's in charge of this money. So if he testifies that these funds are tztaka money, he's testifying basically about himself. But the uncle should also be possible because he is a karov to the nogea v'edus. The only reason here why the Ramah says that the karov l'gizbar is believed to testify is because the Ramah paskins tovas hanoah eino mama, which means that this right, this zchus that the gizbar has, which we call tovas hanoah, to decide to whom the money will be allocated, is not called mama. In no way is he, the gizbar, defined as the owner of this money. The money belongs to tztaka, doesn't belong to the gizbar. I, the gizbar, has ownership rights on this mammon. It's he, the gizbar, who determines which ani will receive this mammon. So in effect, he's allocating the money. That makes him into the owner. No. Tovas hanoah eino mammon. Like, for example, if I have truma and I'm Yisrael and I can decide which coin I want to give the truma is not mine. Even though I have rights to the truma and I can determine which coin amongst the various coinim I'm going to give it to, and I'm going to allocate it to him, but nevertheless, that's not called mama. It's ana, but it's not mama. Piksha shach. The shach asks the following. Di afim tovas ana eino mamon. Even if I grant you that tovas ana doesn't give you ownership rights according to Jewish law, mikomakom choshiv nogea. But still, no one can deny that the gizbar here is an ogea. Why? Because the gizbar has this hanoah that now he has more money in the chest to allocate to the aniyim. Imkain, Havilon Lameimer, we should come to the following conclusion that Krovim, the Karov, meaning the uncle, when he testifies about this moment that it was allocated for tzedakah, he should be posel ahayit. His testimony is unacceptable. Why? Because he's a Karov of the Nogea Beedus. So the Tumim, Rabbi Yonasan Ivishitz, gives the following answer to this question of the Shach. The Shach was probably a century or closer to two centuries before the Tumim. And he comes along and he gives the following answer. The Hecha Sheyesh Lo Negias Mamon Posel Migzeres HaKosev Di Odom Korvetz Al Atzmo U'mishum Hochi Af Krovim Psulim Amal Hecha Sheyesh Lo Negias Mamon El Negia Cheres Kemo Tovas Hanoh L'mad Yomer Tovas Hanoh Einu Mamon B'zeh Einu Posel Mitam Baldovar El Mishum Chashash Meshaker V'lachem Krovo Koshe L'hoi Dekoro Leka Chashash Meshaker. So the Tumim wants to suggest that the status of a Karov to a Nogea depends upon why this Nogea is posel. If he's posel because of a chashash meshaker, then that's a very serious psul to take someone who's kosher and say, well, he's going to perjure himself. That we cannot impose upon a Karov. But if on the other hand, the reason why the Nogea Beedus is posel because he's a Karov, then all of his Krovim are likewise Krovim. And they also are posel Yedus. So the Tumim says the following. If you want to know whether the uncle of the Gizbar could testify in this money, whether it's allocated to Tztok or not, then you first have to determine whether the Psul of the Gizbar himself is because Olam Karov Etzel Atzmo or because of Chashash Meshaker. If his psul is because of Chashash Meshaker, then there's no reason under the sun that we should expand that psul to apply it to his uncle, because his uncle is not going to perjure himself in a court of law and falsify his testimony just because a Karov of his will gain Tovas Hanoa Mama. But if on the other hand we come to the conclusion that the Gizbar is posel lehoyd as an ogea bedover because he's a Karov, and a Karov is posel yedus, then we can expand that to include even the Krovim of the ogea yedus, because they too become Krovim to this testimony. Says the Tumim, the issue really lies in the status of the Gizbar and the reason why the Gizbar himself is posel. And that issue is contingent upon another issue. When we get down to really the kishkas of the matter, the brass tacks, it all depends upon whether Tovas Hanoah Mamon or not. If Tovas Hanoah is Mamon, and we view the Gizbar as the owner of this Mamon because of the fact that he decides who to whom he could allocate this Mamon, then we have a psul of Adam Karov Etzel Atzmo. In other words, if he testifies that this money belongs to the tzedakah funds, then he's really testifying about himself that he owns the mamon, because we're holding now that Tovas Hanoah is mamon, meaning that Tovas Hanoah is considered bailus. But if on the other hand I hold that Tovas Hanoah ain't no mamon, then the only reason I would classify the gizbar in this edus on this tzedakah money as a nogea b'edus is only because he has benefits. It's a kind of hanah that he has by being able to allocate, he never sees an ani. He feels very good about the fact that he could give the ani money. Then it becomes a nogea v'edus, not because of Karov Etzel Atzmo, because we're holding now the Tovas Hanoah Einu Mamon, but he's only possible because of Chashash Meshaker, that maybe he's going to lie because he gets such pleasure and such benefit out of allocating additional funds, which he can now divvy up amongst the aniyim, and Tovas Hanoah is considered a Hanoah. But in that case, we're not going to expand that psul to include the uncle. So let's go back to the first case where Reuven sells a piece of karka to Shimon, and he wants to testify about this mechira. Now, if there's achrayus in this mechira, then Reuven's uncle, who lent Reuven money now becomes Nogea because he now can confiscate this karka that was sold by Achrayus to Levi. Should we therefore passel the Mocher himself? Because he's a relative, he's the nephew of the Nogea B'Eidus. So that depends. What kind of psul of Nogea B'Eidus applies to the uncle, meaning to the Malv, if you follow what I mean. If the psul is Adam Karvetzel Atzma, we can expand that psul to include the nephew as well. He's also Karv Posel. But if the psul is because it's a chashash mishaker, he's going to fabricate this whole story, then there's no reason to implicate the nephew as a karov to be chashid l'shaker on behalf of his uncle. That far, we love our uncle, but not that far. We're not going to play, purge ourselves in a court of law and violate who knows how many surim just for the sake of our relative. The blood is thicker than water. So now we go back to the Tshuva HaRashba. And the Tshuva HaRashba says that if he sells the karka Bachrayus, then the Rashba says he cannot testify. Why can't he testify? Because he is the karov of an Nogea B'Eidus. Which kind of Nogea B'Eidus? It can't be an Nogea B'Eidus of Chashash Meshaker. It's got to be a Nogea B'Eidus of what we call a Negias Mammon. Remember, I asked you to underline those two words, Negias Mammon, which means that this testimony is relevant to him. And in this case, this testimony is relevant to his uncle. Why? Because now that you're establishing that this field has a chrayus to it, then the thrust and the implication of this Eidus is that the Malver, we called him the uncle, can now come and confiscate this karka. So now we passel the uncle b'toras nogea b'mamon, which means he is karvetz al atzmo, because the thrust of this edus is now relevant to the malva. Why? Because this sale was bachrayus, and now we're placing this field in front of the malva such that he can confiscate it in lieu of the outstanding loan that wasn't repaid. Now the nephew himself, the mocher, becomes posel yedus because he's a karov of a karov, and that's what the Rashba means. So the Rashba says hecha she'ein lo negias mamon, which means that if this case would not be relevant on a monetary level to his uncle or to him, then even though he's karov to nogea, he would not be posel. Because then we're dealing with a chashash sheker. But when there's a negias mamon, then we're dealing with adam karvetzel atzmo. And if adam karvetzel atzmo, we could expand that to include the krovim of the adam karvetzel atzmo. Now, assuming you followed everything I said, I'm just curious. So we take a vote over here. Is there anyone who followed me?
80%.
Okay, so again, just the last 20% is the following. That if we're talking about testimony that's relevant to you, then we activate the principle of the Levush, Adam Karvetz al Atzmo, and then we can expand that to include other Krovim as well. If, on the other hand, this Eidus is not relevant to you and your pocket, meaning in terms of your own mamon, it may be relevant to your good feelings, then we only have a psul of chashash meshaker, and that's not something that we could expand and implicate the other relatives to say that they would lie on behalf of their relative. But if it's adam karvetz al atzmo, then and only then can we expand that psul to include the krovim of the nogea. And why is he a nogea? Because it's a negias mamon, because the determination of his pocket or his bank account will depend upon this eidus. And now we get to the punchline of this whole discussion, which is in the paragraph Al Pizeh Kosav Agon Rabbi Chanan Zatzal. And if we have a minute of time after we finish the shiur, if you want, I could talk to you a little bit about Rabbi Chanan. I mean, although I never knew him, he was killed by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. But anyway, Rabbi Chanan now wants to reconcile the Gemara in Ksuvos that we spoke about before on Daf Chaf Beis about the case of the three Dayanim. You remember that case? And reconcile that with our Gemara here in Sanhedrin on Daf Chaf Gimel about the status of Arur Mishpacha. Arur Mishpacha. Right, the Gemara says that the Dayanim, the two Dayanim, could testify to clear the reputation of the third Dayan in Arur Pagam Mishpacha, even in a case where they already signed the shtar, because that comes under the halach of Milsa Davidi Ligluye. And we explain based on Rashi that we don't have any chashash that the two judges would perjure themselves and lie to be machshir, meaning to clear the reputation of the third Dayan, because if they would lie, they would get caught in their lie, because we're gonna send out a whole team of investigators to determine whether this mishpacha has an admixture of an evidence and there's a pagam mishpacha. And we're trying to figure out how to reconcile that with our sugya in Sanhedrin, where the Chachamim say we cannot accept Shimon's testimony about the two witnesses that their mishpacha is a pagam mishpacha because of Nogei B'Eidus. And the question is, what do you mean Nogei B'Eidus? It's a milsa davidi legluye. So to the same extent that the two judges can testify on the kashus of the third judge because of milsa davidi legluye, which removes their status of Nogei B'Eidus, we should be able to remove the status of Nogei B'Eidus for the litigant, for Shimon the defendant, to testify about the Pagam Mishpacha, because again, if it's a Milsa Davidi Ligluye, there's no psul of Nogei B'Eidus, there's no Chashash Meshaker. Why did the Chachamim apply the psul of Chashash Meshaker in the case of Irur Pagam Mishpacha? Says Rabbi Chanan, when does the Gemara apply this rule, as we saw in Ksubis, of Milsa Davidi Gluya, that since it's going to be determined, therefore he wouldn't lie? That's only when, and if you want to underline this on line 4, Leka Negias Mama. Can you underline those four words? Those three words. Leka Negias Mama. Now, what does that mean? Do the two judges who signed on this shtar get any extra money in their bank account if they can be makshir the third Dayan? What's the obvious answer to that question? Hello, anybody home?
No.
I mean, what do they get in their bank account because they testified on the third Dayan? Zippo. So that's not a Negias Mama. But rather, they feel very good about it if the third Dayan could sign the shtar, because they sat down in a bezdin with this third Dayan, and it would look a little bit, suspicious, a little bit below the standards of Dayanus if the third Dayan that they invited to join in the bezdin turns out to be a pagam mishpacha. You know, he's not even Jewish. You imagine you two Heiliger Dayanim with long beards and peyos, they sit together with a guy as a third Dayan. That's a little bit of a gnai, would you not admit it? But as far as the Gias Mammon is concerned, nothing's going to change in their bank account. So here the only Negia is that since they have, they'll enjoy the benefits of the third Dayan being kosher, so that they're not suspect of having sat with a third Dayan and invited him to be part of the bezin when he's not royal akach. So we're really dealing only with a chashash meshaker. We're not dealing with adam karvei tzalatzmo, because as we said in the previous paragraph, adam karvei tzalatzmo only applies when you have a negias mamon. And here there's no negias mamon on the part of the two judges. Aval ilu says Rabbi Chanan hoisa bazen negias mamon. If there would be a situation where in Pagam Mishpach a person would gain monetarily in his bank account as a result of his testimony in a Pagam Mishpach, then it would not be meaningless to say, well, Pagam Mishpach is a Milsa Davili Liguya, because Milsa Davili Liguya is only going to help you for a Cheshash Meshaker. And it's going to tell you that he's not going to lie because he knows he's going to get caught on the lie. But Mikomakom, nevertheless, if he has an Igiyas moment, ain't on the Meyed Al Atzma. He's Pasaliyedus, even though there's no Cheshash Meshaker. Ulefi Zen, now we understand the Chachomim in our Sugya on Daf Chaf Gimel Amid Beis in Sanhedrin, who maintain that if the litigant, we'll call him Shimon the defendant, testifies on Pgam Mishpach on the Edim, then he's an Ogevi Edus. Aye, it's a Milsa Davidi Gluy. The answer is, we're not dealing with a psul of Nogea be'edus mitzad chashash b'shaker. We're dealing with a psul of Nogea be'edus mitzad adam karveitz al atzma. Why? Because since Reuven is suing him for 1,000, and Reuven is bringing in these two witnesses to testify that Shimon has to pay 1,000, Shimon is now on trial, and if he disqualifies these edim, then he is a karveitz al atzma. He's on trial and he's testifying on his own trial to neutralize and to destroy the evidence against him. If he's testifying again to undermine the evidence against him and disqualify these edim, then he has the Negias Mamon. If he has the Negias Mamon and he's testifying on himself, you can tell me from now until Mashiach Zeit that he's telling the truth, but it doesn't matter. There's a technical psul here of Adam Karveitz al Atzmo. This is a beautiful Rebbe Elchanan. So again, you know, we look at the Gemara in Ksubis and we derive conclusions, and all of a sudden we're blown out of the water because this contradicts our Gemara in Sanhedrin. Comes over Elchanan, you're missing the whole point. The Gemara in Ksubis is talking about two judges that have no Negias Mamon. The only thing is, you want to say maybe they'll lie because, you know, it's very embarrassing to them that they sat with the third Dayan who's possible. So on that I have a principle called Milsa Davili Gluye, which tells me that there's no Chashash Meshaker. But Luye Tzur would be a case of Negias Mamon, where the testimony would have some impact on the pocketbook of the two witnesses. Then there's a psul of Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo. And even if you tell me with 1,000 Bibles that he's telling the truth because it's Milsa Davidi Gluya, his edus would be unacceptable because he's a Karov Eitzel Atzmo. Therein lies the distinction. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is talking about a case where he has an Negias Mamon. And again, the reason for that is that Reuven is bringing these Edom to testify against Shimon in a thousand dinrim law case, lawsuit. And now, Shimon is saying, well, your Edom belong to a Goyish, you know, a Mishpacha that has a questionable Yichus to it, and therefore they're apostle. Hey, buddy, you're a Karav Eitzel Atzmo. We can't accept your Edus. So you can say, well, what do you mean you can't accept my Edus? I wouldn't lie. Would I ever think of lying when it's a Milsa David Gluye? Was there a guy that mixed into this family? Was there not? Bezdin's going to investigate. I'm not going to get caught with my pants down. The answer is, we don't care whether there's a Cheshash Meshaker. You're an Ogea L'mamon. If you're an Ogea L'mamon here, then you're on trial, buddy, and your Edus is disqualified because Adam Karav Eitzel Atzmo. That has nothing to do with the Gemara in Ksubis that's talking about a Cheshash Sheker where there's no Negias Mamon. As we said before, over and over again, the Dayanim did not get any kickback in their bank account by testifying that the third Dayan is kosher. All they have is a certain negia that it shouldn't be a gnai. So in such a case, Milsa Davidi Ligluye will help me. And this is very similar to what we discussed before about the Tztaka case. Let's just very quickly review that because we're going to have to end in a few minutes. But in the Tztaka case, why is it that the Gizbar is Pasaliyedus on the Tztaka? And then we'll determine whether his uncle is Pasaliyedus on the Tztaka. If I'm going to tell you that the Gizbar is Pasaliyedus because he has Negias Mamon, then Adam Karav Eitzel Atzmo kicks in, and then we're going to expand that psul to include his uncle as well, because he's a Karav the Gizbar, and the uncle is a Karav. The uncle is testifying on the ownership rights of the Gizbar, and therefore he's Pasaliyedus as a Karav. But if on the other hand the Gizbar is puzzled not because he has the Negias Mamon, But he's possible because, you know what, he benefits from the fact that, you know, feels good that he has extra money to divvy out to his good buddies who are never starving. So in that case, we're not gonna deal with a psul of Adam Karavetz al Atzmo because he has no Negias Mammon. We're holding now that Tovas Hanoino Mammon, all we have is a Chashash Meshaker, and that's not something that we can expand to the uncle. So as far as the uncle is concerned, it's like the Milsud Avili Gluyin Ksubis, he's not Choshed al Sheker. But if we would hold Tovas Hanoino Mammon, meaning the legal rights of the Gizbar to divvy up the Mammon, is considered like that is his own mammon, which is a mind-boggling concept if you think about it. That if I have rights to give out mammon and allocate that mammon for so-and-so to the exclusion of someone else, I am considered the owner of this mammon. Because the greatest expression of ownership is the fact that I can give it out according to my own whim and according to my own will. If Tovas Hano is mammon, then the Gizbar status vis-a-vis Tzedakah is that of a bailim. He owns that mammon to some extent. He has one dimension of ownership. He can't spend it on a trip to Boca, but he can divvy it out. And since he can divvy it out, that gives him one dimension of ownership in the goof at stock, in the moment itself. If that be the case, he's puzzle ahead because the Adis on this stock is Adis on himself. And that we're going to extend to include to the uncle. But if on the other hand we come to the conclusion, as the Ramah Paskins, that Tovas Hano ain't no mammon, then all you could say about the Gizbar in disqualifying him for Edus on the Tzedakah is that he has a Chashash Meshaker, and that was certainly not going to expand to include the uncle as well. And that's what Rav Elchanan is saying here again about the case of Mechira Bachrayus, that in the case of Mechira Bachrayus, we have to passel the Mocher. And why is that? Because the Mocher now is a Karov to the person who's on trial, so to speak. Meaning, the uncle, who is the Malve, if this Mechira was Bachrayus, is going to now collect this Karka through the Avis. And now he's passel B'Torah's Karov. And if he's possible with Taurus Karov because he has an Egeus Mammon, we're going to expand that to his nephew, who is the Mocher, and therefore we cannot accept the testimony of the Mocher. So this really covers about half of what I had prepared for today. But if you followed half of what I said today, then I'm a happy camper. Okay then? So you'll let me know if you want to have another Ian Shia tomorrow.